but it felt so close that I was like, oh, well, let's just get there. However, in whatever means necessary, let's get there.
I'm Kevin Jorgensen, and this is the Freedom to Focus podcast presented by Sterling Rope.
I lost him.
You lost him too? Okay.
Yep. Man, maybe it's us. Maybe just things go to shambles when Jim and I are involved.
This is episode 2 of a 2-part series about Jim Ewing and Mo Beck. If you haven't listened to the first episode, I definitely encourage you to give that a listen before diving into this one. In this episode, we're going to reconnect with Jim and Mo about their recent attempt at an unassisted adaptive ascent of the southeast face of the Lotus Flower Tower in Canada's Unclimbables.
I'm back.
Excellent.
What did I miss?
Jim, can you hit on just the basics of why this trip was important for you?
The original mission, the original goal was to do an all-adaptive, unassisted ascent of the Lotus Flower Tower in the Cirque of the Unclimbables. It's just a beautiful climb, has an amazing reputation. It's in an amazing place. There's just this huge sort of atmosphere and aura about this climb that I just felt like I had to do it. Like, it's just something that I've always wanted to do, and this was the opportunity. It had to be done.
Cool. So let's just dive in. For folks that didn't listen to the first episode, maybe you can give us just a quick overview of this trip and the expectations for the expedition.
So the Lotus Flower Tower is an 18-pitch, really true alpine-style climb in the Northwest Territories of Canada. So it's full-on Arctic Circle, remote. It takes days to get there under engine power. Like, we flew there for over several steps and drove, and it still took several days.
So the last time that we spoke, you guys were training together in Rocky Mountain National Park. Mo, what happened after you guys parted ways? When did you guys first see each other again?
Yeah, so we had about a month after that to kind of train on our own. And I actually kind of quit my job to train for this trip and try to get ready, because it was just something that was so new to me. The style of climbing was so out of my comfort zone. And so I spent the solid month just like working my ass off. And then hopped on a plane and got to Whitehorse, Yukon territories. And I saw Jim that night briefly, but he was already in bed. He quit. He did not come out onto the town with us. We landed in Whitehorse. In theory, we could have been in the Cirque within like 3 days or so. You have like 1 day of shopping and gathering supplies, 1 day of driving and a quick plane ride, and then if the weather's good, the next day you can fly into the Cirque. So we were looking like we could have been there like within 3 to 4 days of arriving in Whitehorse.
So Jim, did it go to plan? Were you in the Cirque within 3 days of arriving at Whitehorse?
No. We weren't even out of Whitehorse in the first 3 days.
Pat, our rigger, his bag got lost. Like, the bag that had our stove, bunch of climbing gear, was just like completely MIA somewhere in the world of airports. And with a couple phone calls, the entire Yukon climbing community was like, no, take my gear. No, sleep on my couch. Like, the
yeah,
climbing
the locals
crew up
were,
there was great.
The locals really turned out and helped us out a lot.
It was no small feat getting to the Cirque. At one point, Jim and Mo were told they needed to trailer their own plane engine for the float plane taking them into the Cirque, basically like a BYO engine scenario. Everything from the van to the plane was broken, they lost a lot of luggage, and they had to buy a ton of new gear.
There was the matter of a broken down van, a broken down plane, an airplane engine that needed to get to the lodge, It was just a complete junk show.
We did two nights in the sketchiest hotel I've ever been in. And then we moved into the strange guy's basement, who was like an old high school drinking buddy of the lady who owned the lodge. And so it was just, you know, it was just full on from day one. And I think it was day five that we finally got to drive to the lodge and proceeded to sit there for another 5 days until we got a weather window that we could fly into the Cirque.
Have you ever been in a helicopter before, or was this each of your first time?
I'd been in a few helicopters before, so it wasn't totally a new experience, but it was pretty wild sitting up front in the helicopter, flying over all these mountain ridges and ice fields and glaciers. It was pretty spectacular scenery.
Like, wow, we are really as far away from civilization as you could possibly be. It was an hour-long helicopter ride, and there's just nobody there, and the pilot says, yeah, no one even comes out here to hike. Ridge after ridge, range after range. Like, these peaks have never been touched because it's just so remote. And we went past those to get to where we were going.
What was it like getting that first view of the tower?
Oh, man, it looked like I shouldn't be there. It's very dark and ominous looking. It's way back on this glacier, but it's still, like, even though it's far away, it looks massive. And it looks overhanging and so steep. And I just thought, I am like a cragging single pitch sport climber at heart. What am I doing here? And that was the first time where just like my heart sank a little bit. I was just like, even with all this work, I might not be cut out for this. It was very intimidating.
Yeah, as the whole Cirque comes into view, it's really breathtaking.
They get to base camp, and they're thinking they're out in this super remote spot and that they have this place to themselves. But instead, they find a bunch of other international climbers who had already cherry-picked the best camping spots.
Base camp is pretty small. All of the good camping spots under boulders were taken.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. We're supposed to be out in this middle of nowhere spot, but there were all these other parties there.
And it was very international. There were the Frenchies, there were the Dutch, there were Belgians. Like, it was pretty cool. And so we were the one group that was just kind of exposed in the middle of the meadows because that was the next best spot.
So when you guys got all set up the next day, how long before you guys started going up the route?
That day, 12 people all made it up the route. So it was probably a record for the Lotus Flower Towers.
Yeah, so that was nerve-wracking, right? Because we flew in on a Saturday, and Sunday was good weather. And we knew that come Monday, Tuesday, bad weather was moving in. And we were just like, should we just like set up tent, go to bed early and rally and try to fire this thing and fight off 12 other people? And we kind of decided no, because we would also have to climb with the film crew behind them. So let's not join the rat race tomorrow. Let's let those 12 people have their day on the wall.
Although the forecast called for bad weather, Jim and Mo knew that they had 2.5 weeks to make their attempt. So they decided to hold off for a few days and try out the first few pitches to get a feel for the route.
When we hiked up to the route, we decided to go ahead and just do the first pitch, you know, shake the dust off, get a pitch in. The first pitch goes at 5'8", and it looks pretty mellow. You know, it's a little wet, a little mossy, but it looks fine. And it wasn't until we started climbing it that we realized it's actually a terrible, heinous, miserable pitch because every crack is full of moss. It's running water. And then everything that looks like a nice, comfy jug or something that could be like a great placement for your gear just pulls out when you touch it. Like, you're pushing the wall back into place as you're climbing because it's falling out on you. And that's kind of when we realized we might not be freeing this in a day like we had thought.
We kind of decided to do two moderate long days instead of one horrifically long day. So we opted for the bivvy on the big ledge that's basically halfway up the route.
Here's the other kicker, is because we were going to free it in a day, we didn't bring haul gear or ascenders. And this is actually my first time ever jugging.
That was my next question, is how do you jug with one arm or one leg?
Pulling down on the ascender with my hand, locking off behind it with my stump, and then reaching down to feed the rope through my gree-gree. So it's like four independent movements to go up a foot.
It was pretty frustrating and slow.
We independently came to the conclusion of, let's do this in 2 days.
Sterling sponsors athletes all over the world to put their products to the test and get real-world feedback from big wall, adventure, alpine, and trad climbers. From well-known to unknown, the athlete team is made up of some of the best and most interesting climbers from around the globe. We believe that absolute focus is the key to conquering all environments. So be bold, be courageous, and hey, be safe. See the full lineup of sponsored athletes at sterlingrope.com/team. Before we left off, Jim and Mo had decided they weren't going to free climb the Lotus Flower Tower in a single day as they had originally hoped. And despite not having the right gear for an overnight, instead they were going to go climb up to the Midway Ledge, bivvy, and then push to the top on the second day.
So on go day, we went out and jugged up the fixed line with packs because we had to bring bivvy gear and didn't have a haul bag to haul it. So we each we split up our gear and each carried a pack. So climbing 5-7 chimneys sounds pretty easy and straightforward until you throw in the pack.
So it wasn't like the heaviest, but after jugging with it for 3 pitches and climbing for 7, it felt really heavy. And finally, the chimney opened up enough where I kind of just tagged it underneath me. But that's also when the chimney got wet. So as I'm doing like an honest-to-God chimney where your butt's on one side and your feet are on the other, I can just feel water dripping down my butt crack because it's just pouring into my harness. And I, like, at this point, I think it was 9:30 or 10 o'clock at night, and I was just like, it's possibly the least fun I've ever had climbing.
Paint the picture, Mo, for this ledge bivvy.
So the ledge was giant and gorgeous. And so, you know, you just had the rope around your waist and could walk around. And it was the best weather of the trip was that night. It was totally still. It was warm. The northern lights came out for us. Like, it was pretty magical. And it was actually my first time ever bivvying. So far we have first time aiding, first time jugging. Now we're adding my first bivvy to it all. But yeah, it was a pretty magical place, but definitely an LNT lesson of climbers should always travel with wag bags, because that is a spot where everybody that's trying to free it in a day poops.
They poop down
this crevice, and as you're like enjoying this gorgeous sunset, a breeze will hit and just bring all the poop smell up to you.
Every little updraft kind of made you gag.
That's such a bummer.
Yeah. So we had wag bags and packed it out. But yeah, I guess that's just a lesson to everybody, is always have a plan for your poop.
Yeah, no kidding. So I wanna dork out on the gear a little bit. What lines did you guys bring? What was the film crew rigging with, and what were you guys leading on?
So the film crew was rigging and fixing a bunch of 9mm HTP.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all climbing on Ion R's.
Nice. Love that rope.
Yeah.
But even though, the first 2 pitches were fixed with a single 70-meter Ion, and even though we beat the hell out of it because all of us were jugging on it, that thing looked brand new when we pulled it off.
That's impressive.
I was very impressed.
So Jim and Mo wake up on day 2, halfway up the Lotus Flower Tower, and Jim is not feeling so hot.
I didn't mention it to anybody at the time, but I was not feeling physically 100%. I thought, oh, maybe it's just nerves and I'll get climbing and it'll all shake out and everything will be fine. And then another couple pitches and it hit me, and I started vomiting kind of on everywhere. It was like there was something seriously wrong, and I said, I can't continue. I can't lead anymore.
Abs on the face, so it's pretty full on. And I just looked at Jim and I'm like, Jim, this is out of my league. Like, I don't think I can lead this. It was just so precarious.
We made kind of made the call to give up on the unassisted ascent. In retrospect, the prudent thing probably would have been to head down.
Yeah, I was really disappointed that it wasn't as simple as Jim saying, I'm sick, here's the rack, fire it off.
Gotcha. Gotcha. What was it like, Mo, to watch your climbing partner's condition deteriorate so rapidly? I mean, that must have been super intense, right?
Like I said, I was bummed that I couldn't just be like, take charge. Like, that's how much I need Jim, is if he's out, we're out. And so I was definitely on team. We should turn around, especially once he said he had a fever. I was just like, oh, we should probably definitely go down. But at this point, we also knew we only had maybe 7 days left in the circ, and all of the 7 days looked like crap. So it was kind of a now or never thing. But once we started this pattern of Jim would jog and then bring me up on top rope, we started moving really fast. We started making up some lost time. And at that point, I was like, all right, our new goal is to just get to the top with the damn thing.
I had to dig pretty deep even just to get the energy to jug those lines. But it felt so close that, yeah, I was like, oh, well, let's just get there. However, in whatever means necessary, let's get there.
So we just kept up the pattern for a couple pitches of Jim would jug, I would TR up under him. And then I actually switched to jugging on the crux pitch because there's that roof move. And I was so tired at this point. I was still tired from the day before, overall exhausted. Jim had come like this close to puking on me at least 3 times. And if I wasn't ready to quit climbing from the day before in the chimneys, I would 100% have quit climbing if I had gotten puked on by my partner at a hanging belay. And so the crux has that roof, and I was just like, you know what? I don't know that I have the energy to pull it, and the last thing I want to be is dangling in space on a top rope under a roof I can't reach. So for the last 3 pitches, I switched to jugging as well.
And with all these hardships, did you guys make it to the top? Did you get that summit moment?
Well, we didn't go to the summit, but we got to the top of the very last pitch.
There was like the bittersweet element to it where it's like, okay, we got to the top, but not in the way we wanted. So it wasn't like a woohoo summit. It was like, okay, well, that happened.
They get to the top, take a few quick photos, and head back down. They'd been climbing now for like 12 hours on almost no sleep. They also knew they had a 6-hour trip back ahead of them.
Our feet didn't hit the ground after the wraps until 2:30 in the morning. And then it took us 2.5 hours to hike out, which should have been an hour and a half. My legs were acting like they were attached to a drunk lady. Like, I'd been hanging in my harness for so long. I was so tired. And like, the hike isn't easy. It's this really gnarly scree field, and I was just falling everywhere. And then Jim takes off his socket, and the first thing he says is, "Oh God, I can smell it." And so he had this like giant sore on the back of his stump that was just a nightmare.
Yeah, it was the smelly part was the kind of the rotten flesh. Yeah, it was about the worst that I'd ever seen. Like, I've been an amputee for 2 years, and I've kind of been pretty active and beat my stump up pretty well from time to time, but that was definitely the worst that I'd seen.
Despite everything they went through, both Mo and Jim have an itch to go back and give it another go.
I was so unsatisfied with like my lack of being able to lead those pitches, and like it just doesn't feel like a clean send. And I wish I could just forget it and move on, but I think it's gonna bug me.
We're talking about going back July of next year so that we have maybe longer days, better weather, and this time maybe without all the extra gear and without a film crew.
What did you each learn from the expedition? And maybe Jim, you can start first.
It was an adventure, and I don't regret any of it. But I learned that, you know, I can persevere and push on even when my guts are literally coming out of me. I don't know where I found that strength, but yeah, it's in there.
Mo, what did you learn from the expedition and from each other?
I had so many firsts, and a lot of them wouldn't have happened if the trip had gone to plan. Like, if we had just shown up and fired it free in a day, that would have just been like a really long day at the crag. Like, I wouldn't have learned as much. I wouldn't have learned how to jog or how to A climb or had my first divvy. You know, because it's an expedition, I learned about, like, you know, simple, silly things like how do you manage an expedition kitchen? So I learned more because the trip went wrong. And then I'd have to agree with Jim. Like, there were times on the wall where I was like, this is the most awful thing ever. How am I going to do this? But now that I'm on the other side, I'm like, well, I did do it. So the next time I find myself in kind of this dark place, shivering at a belay, wondering why I'm there, I know that I can fight through that.
Thanks for sharing the trip. It sounds like an awesome adventure that you guys are going to remember for a very long time, if not forever. So those are pretty special.
I would say it was unforgettable. For
yeah.
Sure.
Well, yeah. I'm glad you guys got back safe and you had an awesome adventure. What's next for you guys now that you're home?
I'm back working, such as it is. I have no big plans for any future climbing trips until at least the spring.
Yeah, so on Friday, I head to Austria for the World Paraclimbing Championships.
Whoa.
quick turnaround.
To stay up to speed on Jim and Mo and all their adventures, go ahead and follow them on their social pages. Mo Beck can be followed at Mo in Mountains on Instagram and Mo Beck Unprofessional Climber on Facebook. Her website is moinmountains.com. And Jim Ewing can be followed at Jim Ewing, J-I-M-E-W-I-N-G, on Instagram.